Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Senate Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Unbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. And today I'm very pleased to invite our special guest, Munir Bauer, to join us. Hello, Munir.
Hello, good morning, Ron. How are you doing?
Good morning. Doing great. I want to tell the audience a little bit about you. We actually work in the same building, as we found out. And Munir is a certified hypnotherapist who is an international citizen. He's lived in multiple countries. You've traveled to over 20 nations, and you speak 5 languages. And you've always felt an internal drive to help others. And your drive has led you to a journey. You explored human behavior and mental processes. You started by studying psychology in college, and then you've done work with in-depth research, conferences, interviews, and leadership within Eastern and Western cultures. And then you started work with hypnosis, I guess it was 2 or 3 years ago, and you found amazing stuff within your field. And I'm so eager to hear your story. And I'm wondering if you could start off by explaining how you decided to study psychology in college.
Well, you summarized it very well, Ron. I decided to study psychology not even in college, in high school. So I went to high school in Malaysia. The system there wants the students to make their decisions at grade 10, basically equivalent of U.S. We only study 11 years there in high school. So you have to have your major basically in mind before you go to university. And even you have to choose the classes based on your major you select, and you have to go to university examination based on that. So I chose business first, but I didn't like business. I liked psychology because we had a class within the business major. I liked that psychology class, and then that's how I decided my mind. Then I moved in the U.S., and then I continued the same journey and the same passion. I really loved the human mind and the human behavior. And then it was so interesting to see the difference of approach of school of psychology in Malaysia and a southeastern country versus the U.S., which is, the predominant Western view of psychology. It was very different, and I was interested to explore all around it, and I was valuing the Western approach at the time. So I was introduced to humanistic approach. I was introduced to Freudian approach, the psychodynamic approach, and all that, the CBT in college. But then I was also searching for a therapist myself. I was going to many therapists to see and experience how it feels to be a client. I went to many approaches when I was living in Orange County. But then finally, I had one class, and the professor said, there's this thing called hypnosis. Don't try that because it's just, something magic, whatever. It's not science. I was like, okay, let me look at it. Is it really magic or, something maybe worth of looking into? So I looked at it and went to one of the conferences in Los Angeles. I kind of liked that. I researched more and I found actually data, but in other countries, more hypnosis. I went to a hypnotherapist. I loved the approach he had at the time. And that was my journey of starting to becoming a hypnotherapist. I did study hypnotherapy. I became certified, but then I learned, there's limitations. I can't work with all kinds of disorders. Then I decided to get my master's in psychology. I was like, you can't do evaluation. I was like, sure, I'm now going to go to get my doctorate. So right now I'm studying PsyD. I'm in my last year of PsyD to become a licensed psychologist in the state of California.
Wonderful. So that's going to give you a much more breadth of practice. Let's back up some. So you had to decide by 10th grade. Do you think that's too early to decide in a career, or is that, you think, a good launching point?
Well, it depends on context. In Malaysia, that's not early. That's kind of late. But in the U.S., yes, it's too early. In Malaysia, there's this pressure in the culture that, okay, you have to make your mind what you want to do in career. In life, you can change paths, but they're like, you have to have a career in mind and you have to prepare yourself since childhood. People decide they're age 5, 7, 10, what they want to do. If they want to do music, for example, or art, they decide that at age 5, 6, and they start picking up an instrument, and then they learn that. By age 18, they're already a musician. And they go to college, they make music. They don't study music there. So it's a different culture. It depends on the context. In Malaysia, that was late for me. But in the U.S., sure, it was too early. I should have explored myself.
That is fascinating. So, like in the United States, I've heard the statistics that the average person changes career 5 times.
Yeah, that's true.
Is that true in Malaysia as well, or do people get the same track the whole life?
No, in Malaysia you don't have a choice. Once you select it, especially once you're out of high school and you go to university, in the first year of university you've already had your first semester, that's it. After the first semester, it's very, very difficult to change major. But in the U.S. it's so easy, especially if you're in community college, you can change as many times as you like. A little bit of bureaucracy, but still you can't change it here. That's not how it is in Malaysia. In Malaysia, if you wanted, let's say, you're going to medical school, after 6 years of, you know, undergraduate, you're kind of a doctor. You don't need to go to medical school after your bachelor's degree to become a doctor. Because of that system, you have to make your mind early, and you have to become professional when you're young.
Do people change careers, like when they're in the 40s and 50s? That does not happen in Malaysia.
It does. It does, also, of course. It's the human nature to change our paths, right? It happens, but if I didn't do the research on that, but if you ask me, like, is it more frequent than U.S.? Sure not. It's, like, way less frequent. Maybe, like, 20% of the time that people change, where here I see people in all ages and walk of life changes. Also, it's about opportunity. We have the chance, the opportunity, the privilege to change paths and careers in the U.S., where in other countries you don't always get that chance.
Interesting. So tell me about your personal path. So you've been in many countries. And how did you pick the United States to go? Why did you leave Malaysia? Why are you here?
All right. Well, when I was in school, it was an international school. And I was privileged to get a scholarship. I did not come from a family of fortune. My grandfather was carpenter, and my dad was also son of a carpenter, but he became engineer himself. So that's how I went to a high school that was very privileged, but I had like 90% scholarship because of my grades and things. I was there, and our teachers were Americans. Some of our teachers were Americans. I respected them. They really mentored me. They cared for me. And they constantly used to tell me, they were like, hey, you got to go to America, especially to California, and especially in California, this place called Southern California, San Diego. Like, you gotta go live there, there's a lot of opportunities. They were the ones who encouraged me, and that's how I ended up here.
Well, I agree, San Diego is the place to go. I chose to go there. I went to college here and was away 30 years before I finally came back, so I get it. It is a wonderful
right?
place to live.
See, if you were my high school teacher, Ron, you would have told me the same thing, wouldn't you?
And you speak 5 languages. What languages are those?
All right. So English is the third one. English is not my first language. I will, you know, screw some words here, so forgive me about that. The first one is Persian. The second one is Turkish. And then Malaysian. In Malaysia, I learned English. So third is Malaysia. Third is English. And fourth is Malaysian. And fifth is Tajik.
Where were you born?
I was originally born in Afghanistan, Kabul City. Then our parents migrated to Turkey. One of my parents is actually Turkish as well. And then from Turkey, we migrated to Malaysia. And then from Malaysia, I came to U.S.
So you've been a wandering person for much of your life.
Right? God knows what I'm going to end up in the next 5 years, 10 years, wrong.
And speaking multiple languages, do the languages reflect, I assume, their cultures, correct? Different cultures?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Very, very different cultures. These languages are from different regions of the world.
And have you had a chance to meet patients from those regions and talk to them in their native tongue, or how does that work?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I also do hypnotherapy, and also I'm in a hospital. I'm working as a practicum student. I do psychotherapy there as well. I do it in Turkish and Farsi language as well. Even though my training in psychology isn't primarily in English language, what I do is I read some of the psychology books in Persian and Turkish, and I try to listen to psychologists and psychology podcasts in those languages to understand them and have the vocabulary to do some therapy as well. So what I do sometimes, I even translate my hypnosis script in Farsi and in Turkish already. I use now AI, does it for me. And then I try to train myself to use those scripts in those languages as well. So I do use the other two languages to do a psychotherapy, hypnotherapy. Plus, I use English to work with so many other cultures. So far, as far as I counted, I worked with 17 different nationalities, people who are from 17 different nationalities, online and in person. I work with them. And I also learn their culture while I work with them. For example, Malaysia is so big, I did not go to, for example, the eastern island of Malaysia, but I did work with people who are from there online, and I now learn their culture. Or I went to New Zealand one time, I did a conference, and then I had clients, and now I work with them. So yeah, I like to work international. I don't want to be bound with one place. I want to be a person of the world and globe, you know.
How do you modify, or do you modify, the hypnotic approaches based on the culture you're working with?
I do a little bit modification, but the core stays the same as my training. One modification, for example, is stairs. Usually we use stairs to go down, right? In some cultures, going to go downstairs, it kind of means you're going to die, to grave. For example, in Indonesian and Malaysian culture, if you say going down, the down is kind of death. So I don't use stairs like that. I use, for example, elevator, or I say they're going beneath the ocean. But in some cultures, ocean is not a good thing, so I don't use oceans for them. And in some cultures, for example, touch is very important. In Turkish culture, if you're hypnotizing somebody and you don't touch them on their forehead, like the classic style, or on their hand, it means like you didn't do your job. Versus in other cultures, if you touch them, especially if it's opposite gender, oh, it's not appropriate. So based on those, you know, social norms, I do adjust a little bit.
Do you work with Turkish people online?
I do work online and in person. We have a great community of Turkish people in San Diego and also in Orange County. In Orange County, they have a culture center, they have churches, they have mosques, they have events, they have, like, dormitories. Yeah, there's a significant number. Once in a while, they invite me. I go and then give speeches there. They invite me to their weddings. Yeah, so it's work in person. They travel, come here to San Diego to see me.
So I was just wondering if touch is just an important part of Turkish interaction, if you could really do effective online therapy.
Yeah, you're right. You pointed at the right point, because yes, they don't like online therapy, the Turkish people. That's why they make the time to travel all the way from Irvine just to La Jolla to see me, even though I do offer online therapy. Or they can have an online therapy from Turkey, way cheaper. You can pay $10 because of the currency exchange, and you can have the best therapist in Istanbul, but rather they come to me and pay dollars and travel like an hour and a half, 2 hours to see me because of the in-person interaction. They don't like the online or on the phone things.
So you've had wonderful experiences, it sounds like, with many different cultures. Are there, I expect there are certain themes that are universal and others that are cultural specific. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. You know, as Paul Ekman says, you know, there are some emotions, some expressions of emotions that are universal and some that are culturally bound or specific. You're totally right. And there's some stuff we're just human beings. It doesn't matter from where you are. It's just you're a human being, and some stuff depends on where you're raised.
Can you teach us, I want to learn, tell me about some universal characteristics and give me a couple of examples of cultural characteristics.
Uh-huh. I think one universal characteristic I learned over the year on is the smile. When you smile, in most countries that I go, it's like a expression of saying, hey, I'm safe, I want to be safe with you, I'm just, you know, I'm no danger, I'm happy that I'm around you, I'm a good person, or I'm a person who has a positive intentions. And in therapy too, whenever I smile, it means I'm expressing gentleness, kindness, compassion. These are the words that goes with smiling in almost all cultures. Or the other one that is having a very soft tone of voice that almost always works, especially with hypnosis. Doesn't matter what culture, when I soften my voice, when I soften my tone, like now in a moment you're going to relax, it works with all cultures. Doesn't matter, you know, from what culture they are. They get calm. I can see it in by a feedback system that their skin conductance is getting lower, the breathing is slowing down when I change my voice. But there are some other things. For example, crossing the arms. In Western cultures, crossing arms means that I'm bored, whereas in other cultures, it doesn't mean. Like, you know, in some places like Siberia or cold places, crossing arms just might mean, oh, I'm cold and I'm trying to warm myself up. So, yeah, those things might be non-cultural in this specific.
So if you work with international clients, you mentioned, so how do you adjust? Like, the way I'm thinking about it, I read from the scriptures with a certain intonation, and depending what I read, I have to read something else, and I have to read it differently with different melody, and it takes a while to switch back and forth. How do you handle that when you... Like, do you remind yourself this person from this culture? How do you change?
Mm-hmm. Right now, for example, I categorize. I work with the Turkish culture. I work with the Central Asian culture. Almost all of them are like very similar. I can work with them. And in Central Asia, I mean Afghanistan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, all the countries who have a stan at the end. They're very similar. And then I work with Southeast Asians, which Malaysia, Indonesia. So these three categories, when I have based on which category I have, I switch a little bit. And then I also tell my clients a lot of the time, I'm very open with them. I say, hey, I'm not from your culture, but I have some experience, and please teach me if I make any mistake. I'll try to do my best to customize it for you as an individual too, because your identity is also a type of culture. And they appreciate that. Even with Americans, sometimes I make mistakes in language or I don't understand a certain slang that they're saying, but they teach me over the time. And it's also a little bit intuitive, I guess, because I did switch back and forth at the beginning. I would do it consciously, and now it's subconscious. My body language automatically changes when I have a Turkish client versus an American client, or my tone of voice sometimes a little changes. The way I interact or touching changes completely when I have an American client versus when I have a Turkish client. Bodies, the boundaries, the social body, the body boundaries we have, the 6 feet, changes when I have different clients. So some of them are automatic. I don't even think about it anymore. It's like, okay, I have another client from a different culture. The moment I change the language, I think, yeah, it's the language. The moment I change the language, everything changes. The way I think changes with them. The way I interact changes with them. My body language changes with them. Some of my friend tells me, the moment you change your language, you become a different person. Like, you have a different persona with every language that comes automatically with it.
So you actually, you're switching languages with appropriate clients as well.
Yeah, of course.
So what you're doing is sort of matching them in a sense, which helps, I assume, with the therapy.
The matching, mirroring, building rapport and all that, it happens all automatically.
What about spiritual beliefs? Do you ever do therapy around that, or do you ever use it in therapy? How does that work across?
I do, Rance. Even though, I might not agree with them, but I learned over the years, and now also we have research to back this up, that if somebody is having a spiritual belief, we can use that to help them, because now it's a strength in the subconscious mind. It doesn't matter what my clients believe in. I try to learn, and I try to use them for it. For example, there was one time I had a client who was a devout Christian, and he was trying to quit smoking, but I was not successful. I used all the methods that we use with other clients, but it was kind of difficult. And then all of a sudden, one day, this client talked about church and Jesus, and then they had a tear. We had worked for 5 sessions. I never saw them tear up, and this was the first time that they teared up. I was like, all right. I got a Bible, and I just read some. I used AI to find scriptures for self-care, self-love in the Bible, those sentences, those places. I used them in the hypnosis, and guess what? The person teared up, and they stopped smoking the next day. I asked him, like, what did you see when I read those things? He said, well, I saw Jesus telling me to stop smoking in the hypnotic state. And if I work with a person who believes in the crystals, all right, I bring crystals in there. If somebody believes in something else, with my Jewish client, I bring that. With my Muslim clients, I bring the Quran. With my Hindu clients, I have some experience in learning about the Hinduism, Buddhism. I studied religion around the world, too. So I do use the information. I don't tell them. I don't disclose, and I don't support one religion specifically, but I respect all of them, be it, you know, the new age spiritualism or the old religions we have in the world. I respect all of them, and I think it's an asset for our clients that we can use to help them. And I think as a therapist, we should be flexible with people's religious beliefs and a spiritual belief. And my clients love that. They're like, okay, I can share everything I believe. I'm like, sure you can, and we can use it. It's a strength in your subconscious mind, and as long as you are okay with it, I will use it.
Do you have spiritual beliefs of your own?
Well, I do, sure, I do. I really love Rumi. I don't know if you're familiar with Rumi, Mevlana Rumi. He's a Turkish saint who has lots of poetry. I read his poetry. There's a lot of deep lessons and learnings about existence and about the universe, which I like. He plays the Turkish flute. I learned Turkish flute, and I use it for my meditations. Yeah, absolutely. I would say maybe I do more research and learnings in Sufism.
Very interesting. Well, I have a lot more questions for you. We're coming up to break. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unberg.
Coming Attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterpointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Unbar, a special guest, Munir Bauer, who's a certified hypnotherapist who is working on his PsyD in psychology. and he's sharing his vast life experiences. You're a young man, but you've done an awful lot, and teaching us a lot about maybe international hypnosis, if you would. So do people in different cultures, do they view hypnosis differently? Are some people more suspicious of it than others?
Absolutely, absolutely. What I learned, Ron, that especially in America, and even my dissertation, a part of it is about that, there's a lot of suspicion in America against hypnotherapy. And the same applies also to Turkey as well. For these two countries, I can speak directly because I lived in them and I have data to support it. But in Malaysia, it's not like that. In Malaysia, people are very open to it. Hypnosis is there. It's not like only a hypnosis show kind of thing. Doctors use it. Medical professionals use it. And when I did some research in England as well, a lot of medical schools kind of teach that. In Russia, even psychology schools teach it, and if you're a psychologist and don't know how to do hypnosis, it's kind of shame. Like, how do you don't know how to do hypnosis? However, when I come to U.S., I was so surprised because in our introductory to psychology book in the first class I took in Irvine, they were telling us that hypnosis is a myth years ago. It was like 10 years ago or something. And I was like, what? It's a myth? It's something that I thought is, I want to study psychology because of hypnosis in high school, and now you're telling me it's a myth? And the professor was like, yeah, we don't have enough data to support this thing. And I was so shocked, and I did a lot of digging deeper now for my dissertation, and I learned, oh, it has to do with the history of how hypnosis was introduced in the U.S. and what the government did with the hypnosis in the 1970s because of the MKUltra experiment. And how that research got leaked, and the public kind of got scared of that, and the people now think it might be a kind of mind control. Plus, the Hollywood made it even worse because of all the movies that we have about hypnotherapy and hypnosis. Most of them, if not all of them, are kind of scary. It's about, oh, mind control. They control you. They control how you think. And one of the examples is the Get Out movie. If you watch that, it's very scary. They literally manipulate you and control your mind. So, of course, the public has the right to be scared of this. Historically, and also based on the movies and the entertainment industry. And plus, now we have the hypnosis show in the U.S. Lots of hypnosis show happens in high school graduations and wedding parties that you go in, and then somebody makes somebody else sound like a chicken or like a dog, and they become completely, they lose their consciousness. So people are like, oh, this is something like a magic. So sure, you know, different countries have different perception in the U.S., in general, might have a negative perception of hypnosis. And that applies as well to academia. One reason that we don't have sufficient data in the U.S., if you use, like, the databases like PsycINFO and PsychNet, they're the two databases in psychology that are very famous, and we have almost all literature there. We don't find much positive results about hypnosis. Nowadays, for the past 5 years, because of what the Division 30 there and the Society of Hypnotherapy and Hypnosis, Clinical Hypnosis, the DSESH, they have pushed the academia to do more research. But if you research those databases like 5 years ago, 10 years ago, we couldn't find much, but there was a lot of null findings. However, in Malaysia, it's not like that. In New Zealand, I was there 2 years ago, absolutely not like that. They're totally open to it. Even they're trying to open more hypnosis schools. They're teaching their psychologists. They're advocating for using hypnosis even in the surgeries. They're trying to train their surgeons to learn hypnosis. Maybe we can use it for those clients who are not really doing good with anesthesia, or they're having some allergic reactions. So the world is going towards that way, but U.S. is a little bit slow as far as I'm finding in my research. And some other countries like Turkey, too. Turkey also has a history of kind of something like that. Not with the government, but some doctors, like in around 1990s, used hypnosis to manipulate and rape some women. And those news became really, really big in the country, and now people are hesitant to go to hypnotherapists or people who use hypnosis.
I find it fascinating to hear what you say about New Zealand, because I had the pleasure of introducing pediatric hypnosis in New Zealand 15 years ago. It was not heard of, so it's interesting to get a follow-up that the country is very open. Well, if you go with an open mind, there's so many applications to hypnosis, obviously.
Absolutely. See, you had an impact there.
and you start anew without the prejudice. People can accept it a lot more easily than when you have to fight Hollywood and the public and entertainment industry, because it gives hypnosis a bad reputation of mind control and the like. How did you get interested in hypnosis? I'm sorry, go ahead.
How did I get interested? Oh, it was in high school, and we had a physics teacher. It's a funny story. I didn't like physics, and most of our colleagues were, and the classmates, we did not like physics. And the teacher was trying to make it interesting, so he would come and tell us stories about psychology and hypnosis, and his brother was a hypnotherapist. And he would tell us, oh, this client did this, and then if you use hypnosis, you can learn mathematics, and you can be interested in physics. And he would, in a way, hypnotize us to be interested in physics and do good in exams for physics or learn the formulas for physics. And it worked for me. Maybe I had high suggestibility at the time. I don't know. And it worked for most of our classmates. He taught us self-hypnosis, and I would use it to study for exams because I had attention issues at the time, and I did not like physics and anything to do with math. And I would use self-hypnosis to study for these exams and to remember the formulas and whatever not, or to even hypnotize myself while I was taking the exam to be patient because I would get really, really bored when I was trying to, go through the exams or the tests in this class. And that's how I passed those classes, and I was like, oh, this thing works for me, probably is going to work. If it works for exams, probably it can work for other things for me, and it can work for other people too. That's how the interest starts, high school.
Can you explain how you did self-hypnosis with high school students?
He would use that counting thing. It was a very basic thing. He would have to listen to music. That's what his style was. He would turn on the music in the class, and then he would say, relax the body, progressive muscle relaxation, starting from your feet to the head, and then count from number 20 to 0. And at 0, you're in the zone of focus. That was his thing. Zone of focus, and you open your eyes, and you just study and put a timer for yourself, 20 minutes, whatever your intention was. And then after the timer, the hypnosis will be gone. And then you count yourself up from 0 to 5, 5 is awake, and now you're back into normal state. Because we were young and we believed him, maybe, and we were also suggestible to him, it worked for us. That simple technique that he taught us with a music and a timer and counting ourselves worked for us to do good. And when he would do that, people would not talk. Now, our class was like 25 people. Nobody would move. They would just study, and we would do it ourselves. We would just take the exam. We wouldn't even cheat at that time. It was fascinating for us. So that's why I was like, whatever he's doing, I need to learn this in a more professional way.
That's a wonderful story. And you now know probably elements of why it worked. He was an authority figure. You accepted what he said. He made some suggestions. And you just followed it. And people do have...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. You're definitely right. He was an authority figure. We did respect him. I did kind of like this teacher. We all liked him because he was very funny and charming. And he was teaching us something we didn't understand, but we thought this works. And now I understand why it works. But all these years, I had to question what he does, how he does it. And he would never tell us how this thing works. He would just give us the tools. He was like, this works, do it. I don't know if he understood himself why it works or not, but he would not tell us why it works. And it was working for us.
Fun story. When we come back, I want to tell you briefly about my experience in New Zealand with hypnosis that taught me something important about how it works. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens, harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar, a special guest, Munir Bauer, a certified hypnotherapist, working towards becoming a PsyD in psychology. So I was going to tell you a quick New Zealand story. I taught hypnosis twice in New Zealand. And I did group hypnosis there. And as you probably have experienced, you guide the group into maybe a favorite place, imagination. And it worked really, really well. And when I finished the experience, I said, wow, you guys are really good. This is much better than in the States, United States. And they said, well, you're the international authority came to teach us. Authority figure. And you have a lovely accent, they said. I laughed about that, but it shows you the two elements that make hypnosis successful. I'll tell you, Munir, as you progress in your career, you're going to find it works even better because you'll even have more authority with age. It's really, really interesting.
I hope so.
So you became certified as a hypnotherapist. Can you share one or two patient experiences that show that worked really well with you with hypnosis?
Okay, sure. There's one patient, I was actually listening to one of your shows, and then you kind of asked the speaker, give us one of the challenging kind of story or something, and then the person said, I was going to share a challenging story first. So
yes,
I had
please.
This client at the beginning of my career, and he was an IT professional, a programmer at San Diego. I'm not going to give more details because probably he's living in San Diego, but he was very, very intelligent, smart, successful individual. And he loved math and all that kind of stuff. And he wanted things to be logical, rational, science and data thing. He went to so many therapists, and then he had some issues getting it over it and what had to do with addictive behaviors. And his wife kind of gave him an ultimatum, whether you are going to resolve this or we're going to get divorced. So he had to try hypnosis, and he came to me, he was like, I believe it doesn't work, but I will try it anyways. So I did everything I could to give him the data, the signs, and all that, and it didn't work. He's like, I don't know if it works for me or not. So we did one session, it didn't go well, of course, because he didn't believe in it. He didn't believe I was an authority figure and was younger back then, as you say. And I was like, okay, and then I learned the biofeedback system, how to apply biofeedback of hypnosis. I mainly would use the sensors, the skin conductance, the breathing, and the heart math, or some of the simple EEGs, to gauge the depth of the person, how deep they are in hypnosis or trance, plus to relax the person before they go to hypnosis, because some people are anxious. They're like, what if he's going to control my mind? What's going to happen? How am I going to perform? All the performance anxiety comes before hypnosis. So I learned to do that with the classic hypnosis that I was taught in school. So I give this guy a call. I was like, hey, you know, I'll give you one more free session, you know, if you're willing to. He was like, sure. He came, and then I showed his all data, and I put it in the projector. I showed his data on the screen. I was like, look, this is how you're going to operate now. Do you believe this is science? He's like, yeah, I know this is science. I know biofeedback. I was like, all right. So it helped him to relax a little bit with the biofeedback system. He relaxed, so let go and all that. The breathing changed and all that. And then I was like, okay, now let's just not do hypnosis. Just let's do meditation. Just go to a very calm place. Relax your body. He did that, and I showed him the screen. I was like, look, things are changing. So slowly he went actually in hypnosis, and then we give him some suggestions. He came back and I showed him the graph. I was like, okay, this is your conscious state, and this is when you went into the state of hypnosis. Do you see the difference? He's like, oh, okay, I believe it now. And then he came one more session, and his addictive behavior stopped. And he was so mesmerized by this. He was so amazed. He brought 10 other friends of all these mathematicians and then, you know, people who were in computer science at UCSB. They were all amazed by this because all I did, I just brought a few simple devices, and I was able to show the data on the screen for these people, and they believed in it, and they had the result. Even though I was using similar hypnotic techniques before, but I was just not showing them the data, now because I had data, they believed in it, and because they believed in it, it worked for these people. So I wanted to share that story with you.
That is an excellent story. When you teach hypnosis, and I don't know how much teaching you've done, but you got to tell that story because you have to speak the client's language and belief. I have an easy time. I work mostly with kids, and they just typically accept what I suggest. But if you have a really logical adult, they may not believe what you say, and you have to show it to them. Beautiful story. Thank you for sharing that. Do you have another one?
You want one more?
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, I'll tell you one more. That was funny, okay? I had a client, he had addictive issues with alcohol. He tried a lot of stuff, but he would drink. When he would go to parties, he would overdrink, and then he would go back and would start from zero, square one. He would go to AA meetings and all that, but he would not be able to keep the promise because whenever it was like a party or New Year's Eve, he couldn't stop himself. And then because he couldn't stop himself, he would feel guilty. That's why he would continue every night. So he came and I was like, okay, and he was very suggestible. I learned that in the first session. I was like, oh, I'm having a very high suggestible client. So I give him a suggestion. I was like, from now onwards, you're not going to be able to hold any glass of wine. That was a suggestion. And I was young. I was at the beginning of my career. Maybe I should have said it in a different tone. And I went to the subconscious the next, and I received many calls over the weekend, which I was not in the office. He gave me a call on Monday. He's like, hey, you know, I can't drink water from any glass. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you told me you can't hold any glass, and I can't even hold a glass of tea, glass of water, nothing. You haven't been changing the suggestion. I was like, all right. You can come on Tuesday. We'll work again. And Tuesday he comes back. I'm like, from now onwards, you're only not going to be able to hold a glass of wine, but you will be able to hold any other glass. And he's good. He's like, all right, now it works. And the next day he gives me a text. He's like, okay, now I can drink everything else except the wine. And he was so happy. That was it. That was the end. You know, the end of his alcohol issue. And that was so amazing. I couldn't believe it myself. I was like, really? That works? That simple? I was planning, you know, to work with him maybe another 5 sessions, 10 sessions. We had this whole plan and I would do reduce and all that. But no, he just didn't need it. Just one suggestion and that was it. That was like so mesmerizing for me.
It's amazing how hypnosis can sometimes work so easily. I wonder, can you give us one tip? How do you know if somebody's suggestible? How can you tell?
Oh, I use the suggestibility test.
So explain what that means. Give one example.
So I use the suggestibility test from Dr. Elkins. It's a manualized system that he has. So there's a series of questions. We do some arm raising. Basically, we do give them suggestions and see how their arm moves, the eye moves, if they can hallucinate and all that. And based on that, we give them a score. And then at the end, that score tells us if the person is low suggestible, medium suggestibility, or high suggestibility. That's the standard way of doing it. The other way is that I sometimes just connect them with biofeedback sensors and I say, oh, your body's feeling relaxed now. And I see this kind of conductance, does it change or not? I tell them, oh, you're now in this moment, you're really excited and your heart beats fast and I will see the HRV, the heart rate variability or the heart math, see if their heart rate changes or not. For people who have high suggestibility, immediately there's a change in the body. for people who are not that high, there's not that much change in there. But I usually use Dr. Elkin's test. That's the most reliable one for me.
That's amazing. All right, we'll be right back. We have one more segment. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com. or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar, a special guest, Munir Bauer, certified hypnotherapist, soon to be a PsyD. In this last segment, and thank you, Munir, for teaching us so much, I asked the guests to give us three tips based on their experience that they can, that our audience can apply today. And you know, you've had an international background. You've had experiences in Western and Eastern mental health. And so I'm wondering, what three tips would you suggest people put into their lives to help enhance themselves?
Mm-hmm. One tip I would say is to be open to different experiences. We never know what we really would resonate with, what kind of philosophy, mental model, or individual, or literature, or language. To be open to different things, try different things, study different things, learn different things. Second tip would be to travel. You know, traveling is amazing, especially for those individuals who have a U.S. passport. That's a great, great blessing, because with that passport, you can travel to so many different countries so easily, and you will be respected as well. I use my American passport now, and I travel, and I gain the experience and the knowledge. The knowledge that we gain from traveling is just invaluable. And the third tip I would give would be self-care, self-love, you know, to do whatever it takes to keep our physical and mental health intact, because our body and the mind is a blessing and gift, and it's with those two that we experience the life and experience in reality, basically. If our body and our mind are not in shape or not healthy, then we cannot experience the world in a positive way.
so open to different experiences, travel, and self-care. I think those are great tips. I'm wondering, how do you, when you have a new experience, so some people just experience things and leave them behind, and other people take the experience and it's transformative. How do you go from the experience to transformation? Do you have any tips on that?
I would say writing it down first as a journal, and when I write it down, I also print some of my pictures from that experience, post it in there. And then I reflect upon that. It works for me. I don't know if it works for others. And then I reflect upon that experience, like what happened, how that happened, and what kind of lesson I get from this experience, what it means to me, and how can I incorporate it in my life. For example, I went to New Zealand, and I had an amazing time there. I had lots of pictures, videos, and I did write a lot there. When I came back to the States, I reflected back on that trip. I was like, what can I learn from this New Zealand trip? What can I learn from people in there? What can I change in my life? And what message for me was to just be positive and take life easy. I take life seriously in the U.S., personally, I can say. There's a lot of systems and things have to be on time. And in New Zealand, it's a little bit more laid back. In New Zealand, things are just more positive. You can show your California driver's license everywhere in there and it works. Whereas our California driver's license, after a few months, might not work in Texas here because you have to be on time and follow the rules and things like that. Things are more rigid here, and because I'm also rigid more with the system, I learned from New Zealand experience to be more flexible, and I became a little more flexible after that trip. This was just one example. Or to be more intact with the nature, live with the nature. People in New Zealand respect nature so much, and nature is a part of their life. There are trees that are thousands of years old inside downtown some places. They just don't cut those trees. I learned to now grow trees, respect the trees, water the trees that I see. If it's on the desert, sometimes I stop by and I just water some trees in there because I know this is a part of the universe, and they believe, some people in the Maoris, that they have karma. When you take care of a tree, that tree will take care of you, and that's a good philosophy that I resonate now. Now I respect the nature and the plants more because of my trip in New Zealand.
So I think you said something really important there, reflection. I think in our American Western society, people do not often take time to reflect. When we have a free moment, we're on our phones catching up on social media or emails or entertaining with a game. But reflection is such an important part of personal growth. And I think putting your electronics away and even sitting for 5 minutes or taking a 30-minute walk without electronics or without even companionship and just reflecting is where a lot of growth can take place. Do you recommend it to your clients?
I do. I do recommend reflection journaling to my clients. And in the place that I work, we also assign gratitude journals, reflective journals over the week that the clients will write at least 3-4 sentences of what they were grateful for, what they learned from this week in their life. We treat every day as a book, every week as a chapter of their life, and what they learned from that, what they can learn. Yeah, I definitely recommend that to my clients, and they're liking it.
And you see it, people will transform, and they transform from within, which is, I think, much more powerful than externally driven transformations. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I agree with that. That's what Rumi says. Rumi says, if you take a look at an egg, if you hash the egg from the outside, the life ends in that egg. You can just eat it now. But if that egg hashes from within, now you have a life. There's a new small chicken chick coming out of that egg, and now you have a life. So definitely a transformation within is very powerful and almost permanent.
Beautiful metaphor. I recently came across another metaphor I want to share with you about what we can do as therapists. It comes actually from a book about Hinduism and talking about the role of the guru. And the metaphor was that if you have a seed of a tree, it could grow into a mighty tree, but only if you take care of it. You have to plant it, you have to water it, make sure the ground is fertile, then you can have a mighty tree. And the metaphor is that it was related to gurus, but it applies to therapists, that we can find a seed inside a person, and then our job is to help nurture it so it can grow, let's say, mighty spiritually, for example. And I think that's what you do and what I do is help people find within themselves their strength.
Absolutely. That was such a nice metaphor. That's also, I think, what Carl Rogers said. It was like the whole unconditional positive regard. He was like, I'm just giving light and sunshine to people, and they're growing themselves.
Exactly. And another example of that was a 15-year-old I was working with from China who landed in San Diego during the COVID time, and he was a very bright kid who told me the world is full of darkness, and I don't know how I'm going to make my way through the world. And we were walking up we were doing walking therapy outside during COVID, and I stopped, turned, looked at him, and said, but you're the light. And he got it. He got it. And years later, he emailed me, and he said, I understand what you're talking about now. You know, metaphors are really an important part of therapy. I think it really can get around the conscious, maybe, resistance to those ideas. Do you use them?
Absolutely.
Metaphors?
I use them. I use them. And now I learned one more from you, that you're the light, but I use them because I use sometimes ACT, Acceptance and Commitment Therapy. It's a third wave CBT. And it's full of metaphors. And we even have books of metaphors, of what metaphors you can use, what disorder. And certainly it works because it's very understandable to people, but especially for somebody who doesn't have much experience with psychology or they haven't had academic training in philosophy, psychology. Metaphors work great, especially if it has to do with nature or something that they're familiar with, so their brain can make that connection with what we're trying to send the message across.
Just like the biofeedback helps the people to think very logically.
Yeah, right.
I'm so appreciative of you spending this time with us and sharing with us some of the knowledge you've acquired through many years of travel and experiences. And thank you so much for what you taught us.
Thank you for hosting me, Ron. It was an amazing time with you.
Thank you so much. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar. Thank you.